Mm-hmm. I mean, because it was rainy and a little, I kept my little mountain guy with me.
Joseph's calling.
Yeah.
Aloha. Is this Joseph?
Hey, Cindy. Hello.
Hey.
Aloha. How are you doing?
Aloha. It's always so great to hear your voice. You know, Joseph Rosendo's just got this, you got a magnetic, loving energy about you, Joseph. And it's, I always look forward to you calling. I'm here with my co-host, Kathy Takushi.
Hi, Joseph.
Great.
And you know what? I have been watching the latest series on PBS on Saturday night and really enjoying. This is the 10th in the series. And I think it might be your best, Joseph.
Thank you. Thank you. We were pretty excited by the destinations we covered. Cambodia, two shows on Cambodia and Vietnam, and then a show on Myanmar, Burma, and then the show on Taiwan. Also, our Christmas roundup from new stuff, and then a relook at some Christmas shows that we did throughout the years. So we thought it was a nice mix of shows, and particularly we're excited by the destinations that we were able to cover, such as the more exotic ones that people might think of, such as Myanmar and Cambodia and Vietnam. And we actually have done a trip on our own scouting trip to Vietnam a couple of times, and we really do love the country and we love the people, and it's something that we really wanted to be able to promote and direct people's attention to.
Well, you know, I am in awe of the quality of the work, and you keep improving the cameras and your crew just get great, beautiful shots, some of the shots in Myanmar, the temples in Cambodia, and I love that whole Matsu festival. I had no idea about it. So, and again, congratulations! You got this more awards, a special award from the Taiwan tourist group. The vice president awarded you with a special award this year.
Right, we've had several awards from Taiwan Tourism for the quality of our work and our the different kinds of video that we've, I mean, the different kinds of show we've shot that has helped promote travel to the country. But this one was a very special one. It's above and beyond the Call of Duty kind of an award,
mm-hmm.
Given by the vice president of the country. And it was really wonderful to be a part of that and to be able, it was wonderful to have the opportunity to speak to the hundreds of people that were gathered there, and express our goals as a U.S. production crew and a PBS television show, and also to once again point out the many attractions of the country of Taiwan. And it truly is a fascinating country. It keeps us fascinated. As you mentioned, we did the Matsu Festival this year. We went to the Matsu Islands. Off the coast of China. It's actually closer to China than it is to Taiwan, and of course that comes with its difficulties since they're constantly being threatened by China since 1949.
I was shocked by a fact you mentioned in one of the shows that one of the islands you went to was just 10 miles. If I heard you correctly, you said 10 miles from China.
10 miles from China, 100 miles from the island of Taiwan itself. So we're much, much closer to China. And this was an island that had been completely fortified and was mostly a military base. It still does have military on it. But in the course of the last 5 years, the Taiwanese government has relaxed that aspect of it and has started promoting it. Some of its other attractions and the attractions for tourists. And,
mm-hmm.
and that was wonderful to go to the island named after the goddess of the sea. Matsu is a very important deity.
I'd never ever heard of Matsu before, and it was huge. The festival you did, I couldn't believe how big this festival was.
And we came back to the mainland for their annual Matsu pilgrimage,
mm-hmm.
which is about 1 million people walk for 9 days throughout the country, visiting different temples and getting blessed, of course, and getting souvenirs, if you will, but basically symbols that they have done the walk and have gone and visited the different temples And, you know, they're following Matsu on this pilgrimage to her home temple up nearer to Taipei. And so, yeah, that's an amazing festival.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I saw,
yeah, largest,
I love that shot that you had of the people actually waiting in line to lay down on the ground so that the people who are carrying the Matsu statue will actually, they walk right over it. They have that statue going right over their heads, and they lay on the ground, and it's like they wait for hours just to get that opportunity.
Right. Yeah, I was fortunate enough to be able to experience that, too. Yes, we the Matsu icon is carried on a sedan chair type of an apparatus, and so we're able, as people that are participating in the festival, to kneel underneath, and they'll carry the sedan chair over you, and that's a blessing, of course. And one of the main things that are wonderful about that festival is that the people along the route, the homes, the businesses along the route, open their doors to the pilgrims. So they give them places to sleep, supply them with food and water, and and of course cheer them on. And so that was really, and all that is, you know, without any kind of charge or anything. And they really go out of their way to accommodate the pilgrims. There were stops along, rest stops along the way. And that was really one of the, and that's also in the show, in the Matsu Festival part of that show, where we visited, go to one of the large tents where a whole group of volunteers are producing food to feed 10,000 people. I mean, over the course of the day.
Wow.
It's quite, and that outpouring of love and togetherness and community is really extraordinary. And of course, it's all wrapped around the devotion to the deity Matsu. But it's more of a culture. It's as with most things Taiwanese, the cultural experience takes precedent over everything else. So it's really something that people do as part of their heritage and as part of their culture. And it's a cultural celebration as much as it is one of the largest religious processions in the world. It's quite an extraordinary thing to see. And it's got so many elements. It's almost like being at a Mardi Gras parade. and there's dancing, there's music, there's fireworks, tons of fireworks. it's just extraordinary. It's just booths, food booths, and places you can get massages, and it's just like Taiwan, just very multifaceted and experiential.
I had never heard of it before, and I follow, I follow on the spiritual path, and I love Mother Mary, and there was kind of elements of Kuan Yin and elements of Mother Mary, but it's called Matsu, and I've never ever heard of it. What people might really want to go? When is it always held at a certain time of year, at a certain date, or is it change?
Yes, it's connected to the lunar, and it's kind of part of the Chinese New Year's lunar calendar. It follows the lunar calendar. I believe it's in the spring every year, and right off the top of my head, I can't tell you that for a fact, but I know that seems what I'm recalling.
Well, after seeing it, I thought, what a lifetime experience to see that, to be a part of that.
Fabulous. And to be a part of it, because you go, as a visitor, you can visit the temples and you have your flag, and they tie on these banners, little paper banners that they, each of the temples stamp, so you show that you went to that temple, and just the camaraderie, and everybody is so up and just happy. It's really wonderful. There's not the kind of wild and crazy party that you could imagine here if something like that was to be taking on. I mean, it's really spiritually based.
Yeah.
So it's got that aura about it. People like some kind of, it's a pilgrimage, and that's exactly what it is. And
I could see the joy in your face. You have this ability, Joseph, to really make connection with people. You're such a people person.
Thank you.
And that energy of the joy, is really contagious, I think, around the people that you meet, no matter where you go. And I have to say, in Myanmar, I have friends that have gone there, and we've talked to people who've been there, but I had never seen the beauty of some of those temples. Like, some of the shots you got were just, I have to give it to your your camera people got gorgeous shots.
Yes, you know, we were there about a year ago, and but Myanmar is an eye-opening experience, certainly, in many aspects, but certainly from the structural beauty of all the pagodas, the land of pagodas. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of pagodas,
yeah.
Probably 30 to 40,000 pagodas, and some, all of them have long and colorful histories. And you can be on the Bagan Plain. There's 10 to 20,000 pagodas. People don't even know how many pagodas they are.
Yeah.
And some of them are extraordinary, and you know they have a history behind it. And you go, some of them you go for the sunrise, some of them you go for the sunset. And you're just driving through the countryside, and there's pagodas after pagodas after pagodas.
Yeah.
And I like to say what I've discovered about Burma / Myanmar, and by the way, both names are okay.
Uh-huh.
They changed the name, but they didn't do away with Burma either, so people could still refer to the country as Burma. And one of the things really struck me, I like to call it India Light, because all of the India is a wild and crazy place to travel in, and filled with, you know, I think in 3 blocks you'll have 33 things happen to you that you've never experienced in your life. You know, you'll see, hear, smell, feel all of it, full range, the good, the bad, the ugly. Myanmar has that intensity of things happening and things, new things happening, and having experiences on the full spectrum, emotional experiences. But it's just not, doesn't have as many people, so it's not completely overwhelming, and they're not as used to tourists, so they're still very much you don't get the feeling that you do in India, which is sometimes that you're on the verge of being overwhelmed by the masses of people and their situation. In Burma, people are much more, have persisted and sustained themselves through so many things, so many wars, and so, you know, the military rule that's there now, and now there's a division in the country between the Muslim and the Buddhist.
That's a big controversy, and yeah. I have friends who say, you know, I go, how, Buddhists are supposed to be peaceful, how could they be threatening and killing people, the Muslims? And then people who I know say, well, they just don't want the Muslims there, and the Muslims say, "How?" I don't know. What did you get the sense of that? Because I'm really confused about that whole situation.
Well, it's a controversial thing that we feel, of course, you know, like Mark Twain, that travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness, and that it's always best to travel and to go to places and to have your presence be known and be felt, and to be able to try to be a positive influence and wherever you go. So it's, of course, possible to make a statement and refuse to go because there's difficulties in countries. Of course, if we did that, there would be lots of places that you would not be able to go, and one of them would be the United States.
Yes,
if you had a problem with that. if you have the problem with, you know, human rights issues and that kinds of things. But as travelers and knowing the power of travel, we know by our presence and our perspective on things that we bring when we travel, if you travel with an open heart, an open mind, you're able to make a difference in people's view, certainly of you and of other Americans, but you also have an opportunity to talk to people about where they're coming from as well. So we went to Myanmar with knowledge of some of the things that were going on in Myanmar and felt that that was the decision to make. And we never feel that people should lock themselves out from experiences that have to do with different cultures. And that includes places like Cuba, for instance, which you know, I'm a big fan of people traveling to Cuba. And, you know, other communist countries that we don't agree with them, such as China and other places. So we went to Myanmar, and we were We were never confronted with that issue on our travels. We were never confronted with the kinds of things that you read in the paper, which are taking place up in the north and along the borders. Where we went to Yangon and we went to Mandalay and followed the Irrawaddy River. And the people along the river are still very much cut off from a lot of the stuff going on in the cities and in other parts of the country. Doesn't mean that they're not, and so their job, and you could see it, is to persist, to persevere, and to survive. And it's a relatively poor country, and people are making their living any way they can, but they're doing quite well on many levels, and surviving and prospering on many levels. Their government has been a problem for a long, long time. We were all hoping that democracy was coming and coming to the country, and it's for certain people it's not, and that's kind of the situation in many parts of the world, that there are some people that are doing all right, but for many people they're not doing all right, and that's, I think, true in our country as well.
Well, that's no, you're absolutely correct, and that is always something I know you encourage, and Peter Greenberg and others is do keep an open mind, and I know you close every show with that wonderful quote from Mark Twain, and you certainly live by it. And when I think of, you know, you're over 265 million viewers, and you're on over 500 PBS stations, that attitude you carry, you are indeed someone who is breaking down those prejudices and opening the doors and helping more people to be open to travel to places like that when they see the reality of how amazing they are.
Yeah, the reality of people on a one-to-one basis is always a positive experience. In my experience, always a positive experience. Dealing in people with, you know, groups and just kind of sweeping generalizations about who they are and what they are about is always a losing proposition for you and for everybody. You know, we're working on season 11 now. We're working to do a show in Malaysia. And we specifically wanted to travel to Islamic countries because we felt we had something to, we will have something to add there. Yes, I've been to Malaysia before years ago, right after 9/11, as a matter of fact, and I went to Malaysia then and found it to be a fascinating country, a quite diverse country, and a quite a country that is very pretty much open to allowing other people to have their religions, even though the official religion of Malaysia, in Malaysia, is Islam. But we're going there to be a part of that, and through that, hoping to bring the same kind of sensitivity and sensibility that we bring to all of our shows, and also be a conduit and for our viewers, our U.S. viewers, so that they can have a perspective. You know, a truthful perspective on the people that we will encounter, and that's who they will encounter. And I think they'll have, if I remember correctly, and it's been a while since I've been in Malaysia, the kind of welcome that we received right after 9/11 was quite amazing, quite wonderful and touching. And I expect the same on this upcoming trip to Malaysia.
Well, I don't know how you quite do it. I was looking at all the, you have a great website, and I really encourage everyone to go. It looks like you've updated and have some great photos and videos at travelscope.net, right?
Travelscope.net, exactly.
And, oh my gosh, I really encourage, because I just looked at the picture and going, how do they get, I mean, there's probably some of the best pictures I've ever seen on the internet there. I mean, really clear views, and you can actually watch some of these episodes, and you can see all the crew people. You really give honor to everyone, including your wonderful wife, Julie, and all the camera people. Everything, all the information is there. And and it's a way of people really, you know, kind of following you closely.
Right.
And being
and we love them to follow us, because there are opportunities. You know, you said a very nice thing earlier in our interview here about being open to other people, and that's what you feel about me as a host, and as from watching the show, is that I make myself accessible to people. And it's wonderful. I would love to have them follow us on at travelscope.net and, you know, subscribe to our blogs and our podcasts, because then they can keep abreast of where we're traveling. I just came back from doing an hour presentation and meeting viewers and talking about travel as a life-changing experience in Las Vegas, Nevada. And mm-hmm. earlier in the year, we were in New York for the New York Times Travel Show. In Las Vegas, I was at an Age Well Expo, so I got to promote travel as a way to stay young and healthy.
Yes.
As well as do what I always do, which is talk about travel as a life-changing experience and the difference between mind-boggling experiences that are eye-catching and, but that and something that really does make a difference in your life for the rest of your life. And travel has the power of doing that. And there are places that I've traveled that have done that for me. And Myanmar is certainly up on that list as places that I were able to get perspective. So if they follow us at travelscope.net, they can keep abreast of where I am and what's going on. Because I'd love to meet your viewers, your listeners, and my viewers. Mm-hmm. I love to meet them live and in person.
And the magazine you have there is there, too. An excellent magazine with great articles. I'd like to just real briefly here talk about the aging, because this, baby boomers, and I guess you and I are part of that. I mean, there's a lot of people retiring now that love to travel, and yet you kind of wonder, it's like, well, is it difficult? Do you get to the point where, do you have to get extra travel insurance and things like that? There's a lot of things. What kind of questions came up from that part you were in Las Vegas, that talk about aging and traveling? Well, it must have been interesting to hear what people was afraid of, or what they liked and what they felt about it.
Well, what I talked about, and the fact that they were at Age Well Expo, which had a travel component to it now for the first time, it's been going on for several years, it is something I wanted to highlight, that great travelers always are, and that is lifelong learners. And that's what my PBS viewers are, lifelong learners. That's how they're described by PBS themselves, that our viewers are lifelong learners. And being a lifelong learner keeps you young and vital and a part of the world, and keeps you emotionally engaged. And I think people get old and get separated and feel left out when they're not engaged in interacting with people. And that's what most of the people I talked to there, was my job was to motivate them to do in whatever kind of travel they could afford and whatever kind of travel they're capable of physically, to keep engaged in other people. And what's wonderful about foreign travel is that you get engaged in another culture, which gives you a different perspective on your life. And that alone can alter your own path towards fulfilling your potential and giving your life meaning. And that's maybe a heavy definition, and it may sound heavy, but it is heavy. I mean, I believe, like with Bob Dylan, that he not busy being born is dying.
Mm-hmm.
And if we want to stay young and healthy and vital, we need to be engaged. And it starts at home. It starts in our communities. That's why in my presentations, I have for many years highlighted my experience in Rwanda, where I discovered Umuganda, which was community work that the Rwandans were doing in order to heal the divisions that had caused this horrific genocide in 1994, where almost 1 million Rwandans were slaughtered practically by hand by their neighbors in 100 days. And the government instituted programs that put people together working for a common good. So our traveling, it all comes back home. That the joy of traveling and the benefit of traveling, particularly where things change your perspective, is you bring all those lessons back to your daily life. And that's, I feel, was what keeps us alive and happy and healthy and gives us longevity and gives us really a fulfilling lives is that connection. So those are the kinds of things I talked to the people at that event. And yes, we talked. There were booths there which handled the nuts and bolts of traveling as you're older and getting an insurance, and of course, you know, to prepare yourself or to protect yourself against any eventuality, and you know, tour companies that are making it possible for people to travel easier now. I mean, this season 11, season 10 shows that you're talking about. We were on a river cruise, a very nice river cruise through the Irrawaddy and on the Mekong in Cambodia and Vietnam. And that's one way that people who have means can travel comfortably. But you know, there's been lots of ways for people to travel comfortably, bus tours.
I've run out of time, and it's always so great.
Yeah, we could talk for hours.
I love talking to you. It's such a treat.
I thank you. For hours.
I love talking to you.
You have to shut me up.
I know. It's great talking to you. Thank you so much for calling in. Lots of love to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
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 Care. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Care.